起去。Well, the weather having been a big issue last year has been great so far this year. Adequate rain, timing's been pretty good. So it's much improved over last year's weather up to this point anyway. And we certainly hope it doesn't turn as bad as it did last year with the drought. As far as the farm is concerned, what's been happening is...
Farmers I talked to last year said that dry conditions actually
help
because they had less problems. Right. What's your opinion?
It helped certain crops. There were a couple things that happened last year. First was we had a killing frost on Easter, so there were no blueberries, no apples, no pears, so on and so forth. So that was a big issue. As far as other crops are concerned, tomatoes and peppers like dry conditions. They got to have some water though, and there just wasn't any. Now, if you were able to get water to the plants and had an adequate source, then it did well. But it was that. As I say, they like it dry. Now, other things that you grow in summertime don't like it so dry. Cucumbers being one of them. And the planting of the fall crop and its production is really affected by whether or not you got any rain in late August, first of September, on into the first of October. October is traditionally fairly dry. September do get some rain sometimes, but nothing last year. So, as far as the summertime crops are concerned, tomatoes and peppers, it was a good year. Last year. And the only real problem we ran into was that there were a couple of late, well, by normal seasons, it was midsummer. We had a couple rains in there that tomatoes, when you get a rain on them, oftentimes split. So you can have a great crop out there and you get a rain and it's been dry and they're not used to having that much water input and you just lose the whole set. So, in particular, the Sun Gold cherry tomatoes split pretty easily. There were times when the ground was literally covered where we just had to pick them all off and drop them. That hurts. But, you know, that's the way it goes.
And in the spring, you need enough dry days to plant.
Need enough dry days to plant the summertime crop. Now, it doesn't take a whole lot the way we're doing it. If you had to get into a field with a tractor and so on and so forth, that'd be a little bit different. But with the raised beds are very good at maintaining a fairly constant moisture content. And I mean, that's one of their real advantages. And so a lot of times you can get into that raised bed, whereas the adjacent soil, which is not a raised bed, would be too wet or too dry to get into. Because we do everything on raised beds, then that's been very helpful. Yeah, a lot of times right after a rain, this is a fairly light rain today. Chances are we could probably get in there maybe tomorrow night, certainly the next day.
So you're happy about the weather so far?
So far, yeah. And you never know. I mean, just tomorrow may stop. That's the chance we take. But anyway, we've been lucky so far.
So what's growing out there?
We're finishing up the lettuce, arugula, mizuna, tatsoi, rapini. The beets are starting to come out. We've still got a lot of leeks. We pulled the last of the fennel the other day. The summertime stuff that's in, tomatoes have really started to move in the last couple of days. Peppers are not too far behind. Basil looks pretty good. The cucumbers look pretty good so far, though it looks like there's some sort of disease in some of them. We'll have to look into that. And the fruit, the blueberry crop looks very good, knock on wood. And, you know, in 2 to 3 weeks, we ought to be picking blueberries.
So, narrowly escaped frost.
Narrowly. It's the proper term. Yeah, we just about lost it again. But, you know, on average, you get 4 out of 5 years. Without having any particular damage as far as the frost is concerned.
For blueberries.
What we're doing right now is planting that summertime stuff. We got the tomatoes. Well, we got one row of celebrity tomatoes yet to get in. The peppers are in. We finished those off last night. Cucumbers are planted. The basil crop. The stuff we transplanted looks good. The stuff we seeded. We've had to seed again, and I don't quite understand what's the problem. But at any rate, what is out there looks good. Fruit looks good. And we're just, you know, we're bumping against, we don't get any more space. What we've got to do next is to get a cover crop for the summer in. And we usually use soybeans. And then 90 days to get to maturity, and what we usually do is to plant edible soybeans and harvest the beans and sell those, and then turn the plant and the root and so on and so forth back into the ground. We've got to get those planted here in the next week.
So crimson clover in the winter.
Yeah.
Soybeans.
So the problem with the soybeans. Is a deer love them. Of course, they love clover too, and so you know it's a competition as to who's going to win out. We've got to have the timing. This one of the things that makes the soybean ideal, besides the nitrogen content, is the timing. Because usually, when springtime is, stuff is out, is right now, and we've got to plant that same crop back. About 90 days from now, at the first of September. So that fits, if we can get the soybeans in the ground now, that really fits right into what their timing is. And to be able to sell the beans is certainly worthwhile.
Of the plants you're growing right now,
well, we're always trying new varieties of lettuce, and it's been a fun lettuce year, and it's not over yet. A couple of the new varieties have really turned out very well. Galactia and Oxcard, both of them are from Johnny's seed company. Nice color, nice appearance, good taste, grow well. One of the things we try every year, and it doesn't always work out, but it has this year, is that we will put in another set of transplants along by the third week in March. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It did this year. So we've been able to have a fairly long lettuce crop. And that's not always the case. The fennel crop came and went so doggone fast that you hardly even realized it was there. and we didn't take much to market. Almost all of it went to the restaurants. We have got leeks left and radicchio, and it is, I think, safe to say it's probably the best radicchio crop we've ever had in terms of size and quality of the heads. You always lose some of them to going to seed, but that's just the variability in radicchio. So that's not unexpected, but they are as nice as we've ever had. We grow some beets, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. This year, the beets have been pretty good. We have a very aggressive mole population that have decided that beets are their favorites. And we didn't realize we had it until we started pulling them, obviously. And now it's a matter of trying to figure out how to get rid of those boogers. But they've eaten their share. The deer like beets a lot, and for some reason or other, really haven't bothered much of anything else because we've had netting on everything. We've had netting on the deer, on the boom, but they've been able to press it down and then eat through the netting. But why they haven't gotten into other stuff, I don't know, but I'm not complaining. Keep them out. So, yeah, the beets have done fairly well. It's not a big crop for us, though. We just sort of fiddle along with it. The arugula in particular has done very well, and we've sold lots and lots of it this year. Mizuna's done well. The market for it is not as good as it has been in the last couple of years. Mizuna is a Japanese spinach. I mean, no, Japanese mustard, I'm sorry. Tatsuo is a Japanese spinach that we grow. The problem with Tatsuo is the flea beetles love it. And so for those who are willing to turn a blind eye to what it looks like, the Tatsuo is fine. But for those for in it for the aesthetics, why? It's a little too much, I think. We have tried something new this year that does very well. And the way we got into it was that Will Mitchell, who's been the tractor man this year and done a great job, has been taking a course up at the community college. And they were growing cress, what's called wrinkled crinkled cress. And the seed catalog said it was up and to maturity in 21 days. And I thought, that must be a typo or something. But by golly, not only will it do that, but it grows in. What we've been able to do is some of the beds that get over fairly close to the trees on the western side of the field, and nothing else will grow in there because it's too shaded. The cress is at home. So Will and I were talking about it this morning. We're just going to save the end of those beds from now on for cress at $11 a pound. Why? We can do that.
Are you growing things right now because of any special requests from your buyers, or is it because of something that you want to love?
A little of both. There are several folks who've been buying this year who want certain things, and we talked about that before the season started. Nana's, Scotty always wants fennel, and we've gotten it to him. Foursquare, Shane has done a special with green romaine, and we may even keep up with him on that. And the Siena Hotel, the El Palio, had them I get his name for you. Adam. That's where I'm tipping my tongue.
Chef.
He's a chef. What happens when you get old? Any rate. Has really been great about buying a real regular mix of salad or lettuce and greens. And as has Piedmont. there's a couple other ones that have been pretty regular about buying squids and four-legged in particular, about buying large quantities of lettuce. Now, there's other places that take other things, and, you know, I've been dealing with them long enough, I know what they are, sort of like Margaret's, and, you know, Lantern, Lanes, and so on and so forth. So it's gone well. The other thing has been that we were talking about what's going on at this point on the farm. The folks that we hire in the summertime have just been getting out of school and arriving. And I usually don't hire that many students. I have a couple of students, and you know, they're on their past being students. And it just turned out this year that those that were looking for something to do were students, by and large. Which is okay in the respect that you know, they're young and vigorous. They haven't had much experience, which isn't so good, and they go back to school the 1st of September, which really isn't so good. So it's almost sort of like, I don't want to be disrespectful, but it's sort of like summer camp, you know. About the time they really get up to speed are of real value, they're going off somewhere else. So things will work out. It does give you a little anxiety and so on and so forth. But I have decided that I'm going to get a copy of Wendell Berry's The Country of Marriage. Any rate, give each of them a copy of it. Sort of there's agriculture. It's not just food. It's agriculture. Is that one of Barry's books? Sir? Yeah. There should be a listing. Probably Unsettling America is a good one too. But this is one of his early ones. And, so it may not be in here. Yeah, Country Marriage is one of those good ones. It's not there. Anyway, it's, they're good kids, and I've got a young fellow that looks like he may be able to stay around, I hope, as a machinery man. Excuse me. Hello. Yes. It's raining down here. And in light of the fact that you may melt, we will plan on working tomorrow. It really is. It's going to continue. Pam called me, and she got that radar over there. So we know it's going to stick around. So I think what we'll probably do tomorrow, if it dries off quick enough, we'll do some weeding. If it doesn't dry off so much, we'll go after the wiregrass. So, a happy day. you feeling all right? Oh, good. Well, yeah. That's right. Okay, thanks for calling. Good. Thank you very much. Bye. Now, there's a young lady who works at Pepper Pizza, as a matter of fact. She knows how to work. And is a good kid. I like her. The other ones are fine, too. It's just that I'm sure they can do all the computer stuff and, you know, all that sort of business, but it's just, which end of the shovel do I pick up? It's not that bad. Anyway. All right, so where were we?
Anything else happening on the farm as far as the plants?
No. We're in the process right now that when peppers and tomatoes start to set fruit, or when they have blooms, is a time of side dress. And what that means is you come with, in our case, feather meal, and about 6 inches around the plant itself, spread a little feather meal, sort of dig it in the ground. That gives it a little boost right at the time it's setting fruit to, you know, to come on. But the plants are really moving. The color's good. You know, they really start looking like something. They aren't all planted at the same time, and you can really see the ones that have been in there longer, and that, you know, how much more mature they are than the ones you just got to set. They just got a single stalk and a couple of leaves on top. So, you know, things are happening. I don't, and well, that's not quite right. But let's say for general, for all intents and purposes, I don't, and it's not that I don't agree with it. The issue, though, is when you're in an operation like this, when it takes so much time to pick, to look through something and find one thing, that, you know, you can't do it. It just takes too much time. Now, sometimes it is a matter of companion planting. You know, some weeds have gotten into it. Why? but as far as the theoretical companion planting. Because of the time harvesting, how much effort that takes, it just doesn't work.
You see that more as a home garden?
Yeah. And as I say, I certainly not in disagreement with it, but we ain't got the time to do it. I think that's the thing that surprised everybody about when you're in it commercially, the amount of time spent picking. Huge, and the trouble with that is that maintenance gets left behind because it's more important to pick than to do the maintenance work. So that burden of weeds and the enemy is always right behind you, you know, sort of shoving on. Hurry up, get this done, so you go get the slay the slay the dead guys.
But in the last conversation, we talked a lot about chemicals.
What you can do about that? Well, obviously insecticides aren't going to, you know, we're not dealing with insecticides. We're dealing with using bacteria and some funguses and so on. That's a very different issue. And there really aren't that many good, quote, chemicals, even if you could use them or wanted to use them. And you know, the issue then becomes one of hybridization, you know, finding the varieties that are resistant, or just, you know, in fact, just not growing something for a while to let whatever's in the soil at least decline. And that really gets around the whole issue of rotation. And rotation is very important. It's really the only way. You're sort of running away from the enemy, if you will. But we've got to, because of the diseases that are in tomatoes and peppers, we've got what we like to think of as a six-year rotation for both of those. In other words, they're not in the same place but once every 6 years. Even that, sometimes, you still can't get away from certain things. Shane, lay down. Lay down. Lay down. Lay down. Come on. Down you go. Down you go. Down you go. All right, well. Not receptive to suggestions. Okay.
It's a rotation.
Rotation, especially for those which have diseases in the soil here that are endemic, the wilt, if you will. The only thing you can do is just not keep putting that same thing back in the same place, which just, you know, increases the presence of the bacteria and fungus. So, and rotation of crops means that you got to keep very good notes as to what was where. And you think, why didn't I do that 10 years ago, 20 years ago? I mean, you thought you were, but you wanted to keep good enough notes. So you can say to those that are younger that you're be sure you got to take notes, and they're probably going to be like yourself, like, I don't do that.
Are you having any business history?
Not so far. I mean, there's something going on with the cucumbers. Now, that may be an insect, and maybe it could be some sort of leaf sucking insect. Moles, have been in the beets. We talked about that. But the disease is the damage we've had this year has been on the basis of either insects or small animals.
And do you think it's fair to say that
let's say that the theory is that they don't, and that's probably true. To run out an experiment, which I'm sure has been done, is just something that the ag folks, I would think, are doing field trials for. The trouble with something like that is that there's no chemical product that's going to benefit from that research, so who's going to put up the money for it, see? And therein lies the problem, because a lot of that research is being paid for by CBA guys who hold it in names. So, do we get the research done we need to have done sometimes? Who sets the agenda for what's going to be done? I don't know.
Your goal is healthy soil, healthy plants.
Yeah. I mean, you stick something in the ground that's not healthy, you just better off not doing it. And you're going to run into enough problems anyway, just no matter how good you are. It's out there.
So I want to segue from, unless you have other things about the farm, to segue to any thoughts you have about picking. And then from that segue to work with restaurants.
Picking. Very time consuming. It on the surface of it looks like it's easy. You just sort of grab something and do something with it. And one of the difficult parts to get across to new folks is that it needs to be done in a certain way. And they don't see, let's say we're pulling fennel, and where you cut off that root is a very distinct line. And it takes a long time, either because I'm not very good at explaining it or it's tough to understand or something. But to get them to do it properly takes time and energy. And when you had to go through that same process, every year, it gets a little wearing after a while.
Why do you want to cut it?
Well, to leave on too much of the root is unattractive, unnecessary, wasteful. If you're selling them by weight, that's not fair. It doesn't need to be on there. It's just you like to have stuff that's been picked and treated properly and the way that somebody on the other end expects it to appear. Now, that being said, there's a difference between the expectations that have been groomed by the stores and what is reality. And the stores want everything to be uniform. So you come along with a lettuce plant that's twice the size of what they're used to in the store, and they don't have to do with it. It's a great lettuce, and that's a proper size for it, but it disrupts things. So there's a lot of stuff that people don't see in the store that are just fine, but they look different. And those things sometimes are difficult to deal with as far as consumers are concerned. Now the restaurants on the other hand, for the most part, know the difference. For the most part, you'll have some folks that don't. But by and large, certainly the ones around here, know the difference.
Do you pick a certain time of day?
We do, and we do it different than a lot of people pick in the morning. I don't like the feeling of going to bed at night thinking that I've got to get up in the morning, it's got to be done before the sun gets to it, and you talk about a monkey on your back. So what we do is we pick in the evening, and after the shade's been on something for a good 30 minutes or so, the field heat's going out of it, and it's a much more pleasant time to work. You know that if you don't quite get it done, you still got some time in the morning, so just the pressure's on to get it done, the pressure's off to get it done, you know, before the sun comes up, sort of thing, or before it gets too hot. So it's just, for me, it's just psychologically, if nothing else, easier to do it that way. A lot of people don't do it that way. That's fine.
So that makes you pick Friday night
or the market. And that means that, you know, it was probably, it's probably 8 to 10 hours post-pick at market versus something that was picked the morning before, which is a good 24 hours difference. That's a big difference. A lot of stuff doesn't hold up all that well. You know, there are things that are varieties that are very desirable, but don't necessarily maintain their appearance for a long period of time. That's the reason you don't see it grown commercially, as far as the supermarkets are concerned. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. They can't do it. Picking. It's sort of like weeding. It potentially is a real social activity. It's a whole lot easier to pick and have somebody there to talk to and, you know, back and forth than just sort of be there by yourself. That's a real monkey on your back. Some things don't apply themselves to that. Some things you just got to do by yourself pretty much. And I try to pretty much get do that myself and leave the things that can be done as a group to the other ones.
After you pick, what happens?
Well, we pick into whatever it's, it may be a bag, it may be a flat, it may be a box. You pick into that, and some of them are watered down, some of them aren't. And they're ready to go, ready to be put in the truck. There are some things that are easier picked in quantity and then taken, let's say tomatoes for instance, picked in a bucket, taken to the shed, screened, cleaned up, checked for splits and so on and so forth, and then, the good ones are in one pile or fixed in one box and the seconds are in a different box. So that sort of thing works much better than trying to make that kind of decision in a field where you're moving all the time. Other things don't need that kind of attention, and you can just pick straight into. For instance, let's say blueberries or cherry tomatoes. much easier just to pick them straight into the flat. Now, some people would rather carry a bucket with them, pick into the bucket, tie it to their belt or something. That's fine. You know, however people want to do it, is all right. You save yourself a little bit of time by picking straight into the flat, but not that much. Not like you do with tomatoes.
Is picking back break work?
Well, it's according to what you grow and what's got to be done with it. Now, people are always asking me about, why don't you grow strawberries? And for those that know, we grow blueberries, and blueberries you can pick standing up. And strawberries are right down there on the ground, and that's a long way down there. And so my way of looking at it, you ain't got to be too smart to figure out which one you want to do. And some people want to do both of them, that's fine. That's a long way down there. That's one of the advantages of the raised beds, because, you know, a lot of times that raised bed is up maybe 5 or 6 inches. That's a long way when you're bending over. So that's another one of the real advantages to the raised bed. And some things you just, you know, if you're cutting lettuce or pulling radicchio, or there are a lot of things you're just going to have to bend over. That's just the way it is. And you hope that you do it the right way. I wrenched my back the week before last getting out of the truck. I mean, I didn't do anything different than I've done 1,000 times before, but it just, you know, and Tylenol works wonders. I'm not sure that we've done a whole lot for the back, but...
So you're not picking at 12 o'clock on the time today?
No. Now, most things are picked in the shade, certainly all the leafy stuff. On the other hand, peppers and tomatoes, you can pick in the sun. I don't want anybody out there picking in the sun from about noon until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's too hot. It's too humid. Go and sit down. No.
Because I think that's one of the negative stereotypes of farming is having to be in a hot field.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to be, but that's the way it's done. It just doesn't have to be that way.
With small farms.
With small farms, and even some of the big ones, you know. You sequence your planting. You don't have to have that whole field come off at the same time. Now, there's, among the commercial folks, there's a certain drive to get it all off at one time so it doesn't sort of linger around. It does is it lingers around the warehouse somewhere until somebody orders it instead of in the field, and I'll let them answer up for that. But yeah, like I say, tomatoes and peppers. Tomatoes are usually up high because we run them up on fences, and so it's not an issue having to bend over. On the other hand, peppers you're going to have to bend over to get them. There's no way around it. So you select the right time of day to do it.
I guess what I'm kind of leading at is you have some concern about your farm workers and the conditions. Mm-hmm. That may not be the case in all the industrial agriculture.
In my way of thinking, you don't do it to anybody, but you certainly don't do it to folks that, that you're employing. You know them. I mean, they're friends. You just don't do that kind of stuff. Well, we don't do that kind of stuff. It's not necessary. And in the end, it's going to come back to get you. Now, that doesn't mean that every once in a while there's something that has to be done, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head, but, you know, somebody has missed an order somewhere, and you got to go get it. But that doesn't ever entail spending a whole hot part of the day out there. One of the nice places about this farm I got is the creek is on the west and south side of the farm. And it's a nice place to go in and sit down in the creek. It's cool. On the same day it was hot. So. Anyhow, no, you don't have to do that.
Recently there was a hailstorm. Have you talked about severe weather and damage?
Yeah. Well, we have talked, the folks that I'm associated with, especially with the CSA folks, Gene Lesler and Laurie Heisey and Jerry Fowler and Stanley Hughes, we have talked on several occasions about hail, just as one of those things that's always in the back of your mind that it only needs to last for about 5 minutes and you just lost it. Early last week, I guess it was a Tuesday. Anyway, to make it when it was. Storms coming through, and there was a question of there could possibly be some hail in it. And I was over at Judy's and left there. By the time I got out to the highway, it started to hail. And I unfortunately made the mistake of turning to the right coming home. And that was the direction the storm was coming from. And I thought it was going to break the windshield. I mean, it quarter size, just pounding. And because the temperature changed so fast, there was a fog with it. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And it was a little scary because you didn't know if somebody was going to come piling into you from behind. You couldn't really see where the road was. And the only thing I could do was get over on the left side, close enough to the edge to be able to see the edge of the pavement. And just, you know, slowly. And I got off as soon as I could on a side road looking for a tree or something to get under, and I couldn't find anything. And then by the time I got to the end of that road, I had quit. But it probably went on for 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 minutes. Fortunately, it stopped within a half mile of my place. But Judy's place really got it, and it looked like somebody had taken a bush hog and just mowed the whole thing. Fortunately, it looked worse than it is. I mean, it just absolutely pulverizes everything. But there are a lot of things that, as long as the root is intact and there is some vegetation left on top, it'll come back. It won't be the quality of what it was, but it isn't a complete loss. And your first response is, you know, we've lost the whole thing. And you did lose a good bit of it. But, you know, there's more crops we put in. Hopefully at this point you've got most of the spring stuff out. So, you know, in terms of when it could happen, it would be a bad time. There's no good time, but it wasn't the worst time. But nobody wants to have it happen, which is just terrible.
Is that a place for crop insurance?
Yeah, if you can afford it. Trouble with insurance is sort of betting against yourself. You know, the issue of health insurance is a big one for me. To do without it is risky. Can you afford to get it? And impossible in some cases. There's, 44 million people in the country now without health insurance? Yes, crop insurance would help. it pays financially for some things. Probably the bigger risk, though, is that the people who have been buying from you all along are going to have, not because they want to, but because they're going to have to change to somewhere else. And are you going to lose them? You hope not. Probably won't lose very many, but you may lose some. And that's a big, you know.
That's an argument for farmers markets,
yeah,
having more but smaller customers.
Yeah. People's memories are short, but I do think that given how long the market's been there and how long you've been dealing with people in the restaurants and so on and so forth, they remember. There are a lot of things they don't remember, but I think they remember that because they have good food. Did we get across what you wanted to about... rotations and weather. Still in it.
Yeah.
Hmm. Nice rain though.
So, yeah, we're good. So
well, it's not as far as her situation there. There's not a there's some things for doing. She got a big team of folks working. What does happen is that all of us are in the CSA. You know, if Judy was by herself, then she, you know, they're out because there are other members of the CSA. You know, everybody just ends up some more. On. So it keeps it alive, and her place is there for it when she gets back. And she's going to have stuff, you know. She had stuff last week, have stuff this week. So, the question about do folks pull together, I at some levels they do, yeah. Community, in some respects, has to do with proximity. And one of the problems is that because of the lack of available land, most of it is pretty spread out. And that, especially with the price of gasoline going where it is, why, it even makes it more difficult. I found myself, as far as that issue is concerned, the guy that is the chef at Adam Rose, which is, I was trying to remember his name before, was supposed to call me back on Monday about what he wanted, and for whatever reason didn't. Called yesterday afternoon, and that if I'm going to get the stuff up to him, he needs it, and that's part of what you do for somebody that doesn't abuse you. And just something happened. At any rate, but I charged him $10 for doing it, pay for gas and up there and back. I have not raised prices. It may come to that. We just have to sit down at the end of the year and look and see. Because I know what the gasoline bill is. I put it all on a credit card, so I can pull that out. But it's... I quit going to Raleigh a couple of years ago. I'd been dealing with several restaurants over there and quit doing it when the gas price went up again. I don't see the likelihood of being able to do that this time. Just going to stay where we got. And if there was some outlier somewhere, I've been real careful about not doing that. So I can pretty much, the ones in Durham are all close together. The ones in Chapel Hill are in two, pretty concentrated areas. So we've got the time.
Is it possible that higher gas prices will actually help you if you are competing against organic produce from California or
California? Organic or otherwise. There's just no way that, let's say radicchio, for instance, is flown in from Italy. If I can't grow it over here cheaper than what they can fly it in from Italy, I need to find something else to be doing. It's not the way we ought to have to learn this lesson. And if we had any decent political leadership, we wouldn't. But, look at the string of presidents, all of whom could have championed increased gas mileage, and not one of them had the guts to do it, not one of them, Republican or Democrat. And so where are we? And, it's a great boost for the coal industry and the people want to drill in Alaska and so on and so forth, but it's not going to help us any.
So when did you first start selling to restaurants? How did that work out?
I was trying to remember this guy's name the other day. His first name was Russell, and I regret that I can't remember his last name. But when I was selling at the market, he would come to market, and he worked at a restaurant on West Franklin Street, along where Margaret's got started and the Flying Burrito got started, right in that area there, not too far from Piwak. And he'd say, bring, whatever you got left at the end of market, bring it on over, I'll buy it from you, and we'll serve it tonight. Like, what better deal can you have? And Russell was a good guy. He was a Vietnam vet. He had his problems, but a good man. And last time I saw him, he was working for a Mexican restaurant over in Durham. I haven't seen him in years, but he sure helped me out. And what I realized out of that was that, Russell may be special in terms of he'll take whatever I got, but there are other people that'll take some things anyway. So, David Bacon and Muskie and all those guys over at Piwak were willing to buy broccoli and so on, and Margaret was willing to buy stuff. And with time, there were, Larez got in there. Bill Neal bought some things. I never had too many dealings with him. But Crooks bought.
Which came first, the the rise of the gourmet scene in the Triangle, or the rise of local farms?
Local food. I mean, the gourmet is a sort of the name attached to some of the restaurants, and I'm not sure exactly what that means. I know that I used to try and sell. We used to grow broad beans, and I never could sell them very well. And then I just kiddingly said to somebody one day, "They're gourmet broad beans," and all of a sudden they were gone. I thought, my goodness, there's something about that name. So I think a lot of the people that were growing or that were cooking then are still cooking and doing it the same way, and I don't think it's gourmet. I'm not sure they would say that. Other ones are known as being gourmet, and they turn out some great food, no question about that. But I'm not sure exactly how you do that. I don't want to step on anybody's toes out there.
But could the best restaurants in the Triangle are dependent on the fresh produce from farms?
I think so. I'm not a restaurant critic. I don't know who's considered the best and the worst and all that sort of things. I know that. I got the good fortune of dealing with some of them that are considered to be the best. They're certainly nice folks and have been very very helpful to me. Whether all of them would think of themselves as gourmet or not, I doubt. And there's no question that the whole approach to eating out, the quality of what they eat when they go out, their expectations and so on and so forth have gone way up in the last 15, 20 years. A lot more restaurants, lots more restaurants, all kinds of different things going on. Some people really know what they're doing. So it's been fun to be a part of that. Which ones are gourmet and which ones aren't, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. I don't know the best.
So what are the chefs?
Well, I think they're looking for taste, they're looking for appearance, they're looking for reliability, they're looking for price. Those are the big four, I think.
So what's an example of something that you grow that the chefs are excited
about? Radicchia, different varieties of lettuce, leeks, fennel. I mean, we don't grow it unless they get excited about it. if they don't want it, we need to find something else to be growing. Now, there are some things that they want that we don't grow because we ain't got the room or because it doesn't work here or, there's a myriad of reasons. So it's not like us, grows everything they want. That's not the case, but there are a lot of us doing it at this point, and I think among us, why pretty much what they want that's possible, they can do it.
Did you pitch the items?
No. What I do is at the end of the year, I will talk to each of them about, what's gone on over the last year, what could we do better, what didn't we do that we could do that you want, just sort of an airing of what's going on and what needs to be, and
quantity,
how long is the season going to be, and that one is tough because you want it to be as long as it can be, and they want it to be as long as it can be. It's all out there. it's the weather. And sometimes you can do it and sometimes you can't. But the ideas basically come from them. They know a lot more about food than I do. Now, there are certain things that I may hear about from somebody else, like this Crest thing that Will brought up. And I've said let me sidetrack here for a minute, because I think it's important. I've had usually sort of a lead person doing labor that, you know, is very, very closely associated with the farm and has been here for some time and so on and so forth. And my position with those folks is that if they got something they want to try out, maybe they got the idea from some of the restaurants, maybe it's their own idea, maybe their mother said something to them. I don't know where it comes from. But anyway, they want to try it. And a good one is Matt Jensen wanted to do cucumbers. I said, Matt, cucumbers are pretty, I don't know that there's that much of a market for them. But if you want to do it, grow them, see what happens to them, we'll sell them, and if it works, we'll put it in rotation. And if money comes off of it that first year, it's yours. So we've ended up with several things that came about for that reason. They wanted to try it. I said, well, I don't know, we'll see. But, you know, they've been right. So that's been, it's been fun. I think is important for them. It gets them both into the cultivation of the crop, so on and so forth, what you do to get it up, and so on, and really got to study about it, and the marketing of it, you know, where you're going to sell it. So. Yeah, the cucumber thing, we, as with everybody else, you always end up with a surplus at sort of the peak season. So, and I don't remember whose idea this was. I should. Maybe it was Daryl's. We prepare cucumber soup in the market, just as a cold cucumber soup. No cooking to it or anything like that, just a blender and the cucumbers and a little bit of garlic and some yogurt, and then hand out samples. Anybody, you know, passing by, works like a charm, works like a charm. And I've had a number of people who always hand out the recipe with it, and I've had a number of people who come back and, you know, did that recipe work out for them, blah, blah, blah. So that's a little different than dealing with the restaurants who make requests, but I think it gives some of the young folks a real shot at doing something.
So the Carver Farmers Market just had its 30th anniversary. And we talked about how you've been interested in markets in New York, Tennessee. We didn't talk about the early days of the market when it was just a few people and then how it grew.
If I'm repeating some of that stuff before I get to the main difference. When I was here in 78, I had a fellowship with a clinical scholars program over in medical school. Boring, I mean, out of my skull. It was just, the Johnson Foundation had become, we already talked about that. Okay, all right. Well, some of the medical students wanted to set up the Student Health Coalition, which is what we'd done over in Tennessee and Alabama and Georgia. So in the process of doing that and helping them get some proposals written and so on and so forth, we talked about some of the things that had come along since then, in particular the Agriculture Marketing Project, which had been setting up markets in Tennessee. A couple of the students over here, Alan Baumgarten in particular, were very interested in that, and although wanted to work with the medical part, were willing to spend some time sort of helping that get rolling. They knew of some other people in the School of Public Health who potentially were organizers, and Bobby Wallace was the person who was hired to be the organizer for the thing here in Chapel Hill. And I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the woman's name who did the work over in Raleigh, but that didn't last. But the one here worked on already. The first market was up at the Church of Reconciliation, and we felt very lucky to get a dozen people and practically had to, you know, go get them and carry them up there. One of those people just died here a couple weeks ago, which was in fact, he died the week of the anniversary. Henry Sparrow, great guy.
That was a dozen customers or a dozen vendors?
Vendors. Wilbur Bryant, you know, who sells here in Pittsburgh, large black fellow, who's quite a personality and has been selling stuff for a long time. Sarah Llewellyn, Jack Hanton, there were a dozen of them. And the good thing about working with the church was that it potentially provides a set of consumers who have some commitment to the market because it's on their church parking lot. And that helps out. Church Reconciliation was not a big church, but on the other hand, it worked. And then it got bigger the next year, and so there's a savings and loan that's still adjacent to Church Reconciliation. Used their parking lot, and it continued to get bigger, and so we moved over to Eastgate. By that time, there were a lot of requests for helping out other communities start markets and so on and so forth. And so Richard Pippin and Dale Everidge took over the agriculture marketing project and did a lot of organizing in other places besides here.
And at the very beginning, did you set up the rules for?
The rules we brought from Tennessee. And the rule number one is if you don't grow it, you don't sell it. I mean, all the rest of it is somewhere way behind that one. There could be no exception to that. And in fact, one of the original people that became a market manager was kicked out for that. Another one of the original ones, without naming names, was kicked out because he just never could quite distinguish between what was his and what he got from somebody else.
No resell.
You cannot buy and let me give you the reason why for that. Let's say, and Henry Sparrow is a good example of this. Suppose Henry's got, you know, 5-10 acres of corn out there. He's taking care of it. He's got money in it. He's taking care of it. It's ready to go. And he takes it up there to the market. Well, on the same day, one of the other farmers has realized that it's time for corn to be coming in. Or maybe it's even the week before. He goes down to Georgia or Florida somewhere with a big truck, buys up a load, comes back up here, parks. He sells because he can cut the price. He got it cheap. He can cut the price. Henry's got some corn and got good corn, but his price is not that low because it cost him more than that. It just doesn't work out. And that sort of thing. A couple times that happened, and you just killed the market. You can't let that happen. Now, is that price fixing? No, it's not price fixing. It is saying, though, that you can't go and get it from somebody else and bring it in here. That's the issue. It's not the price. But the issue is you can't go and get something you didn't grow. And
how did you make sure it didn't become craft?
You restrict the number of people at craft. You know, you've only got so much room to begin with, and that's not to say that there's anything matter with crafts. That's a different kettle of fish. And you know, if somebody wants to sell a few of this, that, or the other thing, along with what they're selling at the market, that's one thing. But somebody, or a lot of somebodies who want to come in and make it a flea market or a crafts market or something, that's a different. There's someplace else for that. Yeah. Mike Bro, who was the town attorney at that time over in Carrboro, the federal government, for reasons that were always sort of a puzzle, had decided that they were going to put up money for sheds for farmers markets. And I think what that was probably intended to do was for the state farmers market kind of stuff. The town of Carrboro wasn't necessarily overly receptive to the idea, but Mike knew where the money was and done the research and so on and so forth, and met together with several of us about getting a site. And the obvious place was Carmel Mall had just been put in there, and with any commercial place you have to have a certain number of parking spaces. There weren't enough parking spaces within that area to fulfill the requirement that the guy who ran that place had. He owned the place a block away behind Main Street there, between where the clinic is and where the emergency rescue squad is, that was an ideal place for a market. It was right off Main Street, plenty of parking, and a flat, level place. Put up a shed, paid for by the feds, worked out a deal with the town of Carrboro. That was it. It didn't take all that long. It took a while, but not all that long. And the deal was that, you know, they were responsible for the shed. As far as the running of the market and the rest of it was concerned, that was completely controlled by the farmers. That had nothing to do with the town of Carrboro. We would pay some certain amount of rent to Carrboro to keep them happy. We're fine. Should still be there. There were some folks that wanted to move it somewhere else. It moved. We have been handicapped with parking since the beginning. It is the big issue, and especially for a lot of the older people, they just quit coming because they can't walk that far. They haven't got the transportation. The uncertainty of where they're going to have to park. But that's. Basically how it got done, and as I recall, it was Bobby Wallace that was a major person. I met with him a number of times, but it was Bobby that did the work. That's a she, by the way.
So over this time, you kept adding more and more members.
Yeah. And it was really regulated by, or it was, according to how many places you had under the shed. And then there were some places outside the shed. Henry and Sparrow and I had been outside the shed for a long time. And then when we moved over to the place we're at now, we stayed outside. And then finally, toward the last 4 or 5 years that Henry was selling to market, a place came open under the shed, and there were two places, so he got one, I got the other one. Yeah, we've been selling together for 20 years, probably, I guess. Henry was a good guy. It was amazing. He and Bill Friday about the same age, and Friday knew everybody, so did Henry. And they knew everybody from a very different perspective. I mean, Henry had gone to school in Chapel Hill, and gone to Chapel Hill High, and so on and so forth, and was from a rural background. And Bill Friday was obviously on a different plane there, but he always stopped to talk to Henry. And I wish that I had been smart enough to have a tape recorder with me, because the stories they used to get into about so-and-so, and yeah, this and that, so on and so forth, they both remembered them. It was from a little bit different vantage point, but nonetheless, and I kicked myself a million times for not having done that. But those were any rate, what's next?
Do you think the markets, to what extent does the market serve as a social
venue?
Part of
big. Now, in the past, more so than the present, I think. That may not be fair. I don't know the younger population. I don't know that anybody in the market knows the younger population very much. Food has become an issue, so you've got a lot of people coming there who are students or graduate students or recently out of school, whereas in the past, the population was older. They were more the faculty and the people that work for UNC and so on and so forth. And those people are still there, but there are a lot more students who are that age. How much of it is in a social event for them, I don't know. My guess is it must be some, because some of them stay around for they may be there for an hour, and you see them going round and round and round. Now, whether they're seeing friends or whether they're just going round and round and round, I don't know. How important is it to be seen at the Carver Farmers Market? I don't know that one either. But, yeah, there's a lot of people that know each other, and you see it all the time, speaking to each other, and how are the kids, and this and that, and it's a social occasion between the farmers and the people you're dealing with. We've seen the kids grow up, and parents die off, and so on and so forth. So it's a community that perhaps probably wasn't there in the past because there wasn't a market. But it certainly is now. And it only meets once a week. My guess is that a lot of those people have been out on farms because of the farm tour that CFSA puts on. But we got a whole lot of people moving into.
Over the years, have there been rules or issues that come up to keep the market happy?
Usually having to deal with conflicts. The one this year, for instance. There's a guy that has been selling pecans at the market for some time. The freeze last year got everybody's pecans, including those in his neighborhood. He kept bringing pecans. And so there was a major, set to between the committee that sort of overlooks that, oversees that kind of stuff, and this guy as to where the pecans come from, and can you prove it? And of course, he said he could, and they said, well, we don't see it. But
the reselling issue seems to always...
It's lingering out there, yeah. Sometimes it's splitting hairs. There was a guy who did a lot of landscaping. This was in the early days. And what he was doing, he came to the market, would bring a lot of plants with him. And what he was doing was he would go to Georgia or Florida, somewhere down that way, pick up some plants, come back up here, and bring them to market. Now, how long had he held on to them before he bring them? How long should he hold on to them? But those are issues, and he didn't like the decision, and the board didn't particularly like what was going on, and so it was a very contentious issue. But how long did he have to hold that plant before it became his? That's a tough question.
What's the size of the area?
selling?
50 miles.
Oh, 50 miles. I'll tell you another thing that happened that was close to a major change in the market, and that was when the health department said you had to have a registered kitchen. There are a lot of folks, Henry Spear's wife, Laura, made great fried apple pies. I mean, people line up to get those fried apple pies. But she couldn't get her kitchen certified. You got to have a steel sink and this and that and all this. I mean, the regulations were set up for some fast food restaurant. But who's got that kind of capital? No. So all of a sudden, just with one fell swoop, you cut out a lot of people who made a real contribution to the market. Now, some of them have been able to do what was necessary to keep doing it, and one way or another have been able to get a license. But it was a big issue at the time and cut out a lot of people. There have been those sorts of things. Those are the ones that come to mind. Other ones.
Can you talk about your going through the market on a weekly basis and having face-to-face with your buyers, what that means?
Farmer.
If you wholesale, you might never meet
right. Well, and the CSA, I mean, that's one of my objections about the CSA. Come back there. It's important that if you don't see them for a while, you know what's going on. Now, I must admit to you, I probably couldn't tell you the names of half of them. I'm terrible on names. And I've been seeing them long enough that I should have remembered their name and didn't have the guts of the intellect to say, okay, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name. Because the trouble is that I'd have forgotten it by the next week anyhow. But, you know, recognize faces and so on and so forth. Now, you know, when the kids come back, you know, 15 years later and say, oh, don't you remember me? And they go, well, probably not. But, you know, and if I'm not there, you know, a lot of people, where were you last week? You know, and that's, you know, that means something. And these are people that I don't see under any other circumstances. I don't know where most of them work. And some of them, it's a joyous, seeing them every week. Other ones, it's very serious because there's some real problems going on. And, you know, it's not a happy time. There's a guy in the history department, and he and his wife are always traveling, and we have a great time going on about where they're going next, and, do they need a bag boy, and you know, they'll be gone for a couple of weeks and you come back and have all these tales to tell about this place and so on and so forth. And I don't mind taking the time to stand and talk for a while. You gotta be careful about it. And the trouble with talking is that and everybody in the market learns it pretty quick, and that is if there's a group that's talking and they're standing in front of your place, they can shut you down for 15, 20, 30 minutes because they're taking up the space and nobody can get to you. And they'll come by and sort of wave at you over the top. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about some serious dollars there. And, you know, there have been occasions where you sort of, okay, this is enough, and politely say, you know, if you folks wouldn't mind. And of course there are some people who don't mind, and then there are some people who mind a lot and basically tell you where to go. There's no good way of handling that, which is unfortunate. As I say, I think a lot of those people have come out to the farm one time or another, usually with a CFSA tour. It's gotten bigger and better every year. It's probably one of the most important things we do, CFSA does, or we do, or however you want to say it. Now, your question about what about not seeing them, or just it's not in what's going on. That's the problem I have with the CSA, because what happens is that we figure out among us, the farmers, that is, the participants, what we got that can go in a box that totals up to about the right amount of money and has a broad enough spectrum. Judy puts together some recipes that fit into it. And in my case, I take the box of 15 boxes and I take them up to the Chatham Marketplace, put them in the cooler, and they got the names on them and so on and so forth, and they come and get their box and leave the box from last week to pick up. I think it's fair to say that probably of those 15, I might recognize a couple of them that I've never seen. What we did this year that helped some was that we had field days, one at Judy's and one over here, and it required attendance. If you're going to be a part of the CSA, you got to show up. There were some that decided not to do that, but most of them did come. I think it helped. It's certainly not seeing them every week. We'll see what happens when the blueberries come in, because I hope that they will be among the ones that come out to pick. But it makes it a much more business than social. I know the folks that I'm dealing with. You know, there's some folks you talk to about politics, or some folks you don't talk to about politics. There's other ones that about the kid, or the mother just died, or the uncle who's gone to the hospital, or the trip they just made. Don't ask me to give you the names, but I know what they're doing. and I assume they probably know something about me, but. That makes a difference. It really does. And I don't know of any other thing besides that market that does as well at bringing together different income groups, different professions like the market does. You know, if everybody's working for Glaxo out here, well, boss man's got the big corner office up there, and the folks working in the plant somewhere back over here, they might see each other in passing, maybe, sometimes, not likely. And he's got the special parking place, and the rest of them are hiking it. That doesn't happen anymore. And I don't know.
Well, the face-to-face builds something.
And it's trust. It's also just the enjoyment of seeing them. You know, it says something about a world that is spinning away from us pretty fast. Doesn't have a lot of room for continuity. And I think for human beings, there is a need for continuity. It's not going to come about through that cell phone, I don't think. I guess it could, but text messaging isn't going to do it, I don't think. But, you know, with a new generation and a different way of looking at things, it may be all they need.
Start the CSA.
3 years ago.
And it's unusual to have several farms do it once again?
Yeah, I think the majority of them are single farms. You know, there is some proximity. We're within shouting distance of Pittsburgh anyway, except for Stanley. So it works out that we have more variety to put in the box. You know, every once in a while you see somebody that's said, you know, I've had Swiss chard for 15 weeks. It's enough. It's true. You don't want 15 weeks of Swiss chard. One person could get out that kind of variety, you know, could, but in all likelihood, you've got a lot more variety if you take it from several more people who provide stuff.
Now, with the CSA, you get paid?
They put up money in advance. We don't get paid until we have, what happens is that there's a dollar figure put on what goes in the box. And what that total that you contributed to it at the end of the month, you get paid for. And it's calculated on the box being worth $15. And then for however many weeks you go. And then it has to do with how many people you got in. We had done 84, 85 last year, and when we sat down this last winter, last fall and this last winter to think about what we want to do this spring, the drought was hanging heavy, and so we decided that maybe we better cut back. So we backed off to, it was supposed to be 75, and several of them sort of slipped in there. So we got 79. Now, the way things have been going, you know, we could have done a lot more. Hindsight's 20/20. So, it's... If we can really continue requiring folks to come to the farm and pushing them to come out and pick and so on and so forth, you know, maybe we can get it to be more than just pick up the box and check the name off. I hope so. I don't know enough about the people that are in to know, you know, are we talking about middle income folks? Probably. Professionals? Probably. Have they got time to fiddle around the farm? No. Do they want to? Maybe.
Your decision to participate in CSA, does that relate to wanting
No. Diversification for me means you've got some more restaurants out there. There's certainly a lot more feedback from them to me. I mean, I'm getting a whole lot more out of it. The CSA is for the most part, a dollar exchange. I hope we can figure out ways of doing it better, but basically it's a dollar exchange. It's also a dollar exchange with restaurants, but, you know, what I'm getting out of those restaurants is a whole different problem.
Wasn't the CSA model started partly with financing up front?
Right.
So?
See, we don't... That money isn't, you don't use any of that money. It's not available until you have put in a crop. It's in an account for the CSA, but it's not available for use.
Well, That seems counter to the CSA model.
Well, it may be, but when you've got, five folks participating, that becomes an issue.
Hybrid model.
Yeah. You know, if I was doing it by myself, then would I spend that money early? Maybe. And what happens if you're belly up? Deep water. On the other hand, you know, if it's early spring and something happens and you haven't got the cash, it's either borrow it from another bank, which is obviously not going to happen, or you know, that's what that fund's there for. That's not the way we've used it. And I say that. I don't think any bills that Judy racks up are used for that, but she does the accounting, so I don't know. Good question about that.
So you mentioned a couple of times about people visiting the farm and farms.
Many years ago, the first thing we did was to set up the conference that is the annual conference, Bob Miller was the head of the Soils Department at that time and was probably the only faculty person over there who really was supportive at all
at
NC State. And so the first one we had, I think, was at NC State. Debbie Westford would remember better than I did. At any rate, and then somewhere after that, you know, we got started with the tours. By that time, there were a lot of folks on board. I couldn't tell you when the first one was. At any rate.
About 20 years
ago. And they've gotten bigger and better every year. There have been a couple times that it's come close to sort of being terminated. I think we've passed beyond that now. A lot of people just didn't, and even now, a lot of people don't want to participate. That's certainly their choice. I regret it. I think the more people we can get out to the farm to see what's going on, the better off we all are. At any rate, but the tours. If I could orchestrate the tours the way I would have them done, is that you basically walk a group of folks through the farm, and maybe there are a couple of you that are doing it, and you explain to folks what's going on and the whys and wherefores of it and are available for questions. A lot of people just don't want to take the time to do that. I think that if people are given the time to come out to the place they deserve, more than that. And I never made a big issue out of it, but I, quite frankly, if you're not willing to do that, I'd take them off the tour. People just coming out, you know, look over there, oh, there's a nice pig over there in the lot, and there's some nice sunflowers over there, and okay, let's go. I mean, they came, they gave of their time to come out there, get off your do-nothing stool and go, you know, make it worth something. You know more about it than they do, so you're not. It's not like somebody's going to stump you or something. Or it doesn't hurt to say, I just don't know.
And over the years, have you got questions from people that you could believe where X comes from, that kind of thing?
I, I'm sure they have. I can't call them to mind right off, but there have been some of them that just you think, my God, it's sort of like the when we had the solar greenhouse project, which was another spinoff. But this greenhouse out beside this house here was the first one I've ever done. And there were some students, undergraduate students from over Duke that helped out in that project. None of them had ever been on a stepladder in their life. I'm obviously still sort of just how can you get to be college age and you've never been up a stepladder? I don't understand it. But at any rate, there it is. And so there have been people that that we've gotten into it. I mean, peacefully gotten into it. But they're obviously with a different mindset. And why they came, I'm not so sure. But in the course of their being there, they've gotten into it over issues. I have been, in the last couple of years, I have been aggressively blatant about my support of Latinos. I got no patience with the people who are so close-minded and selfish for the supposedly richest country in the world to say, you're good enough to build a house for me, but you're not good enough to be a citizen of the state. They clearly don't know their history, because there are very few families that can say that they were not immigrants in this country, and nobody invited them, I can tell you that, and certainly the Indians didn't invite them. In fact, tried their best to run them out of here. I occasionally can launch into a sermon about that and sort of dare anybody to take me on. I think I got the higher ground on them on that one. But
well, if people want to fight you over organic and whether it works?
They used to, and especially over whether you can make a living out of it. In recent years, they don't come up anymore.
You think that battle?
No. I don't think the battle has been won, but I think the people that are coming to the tour. You know, if you've been doing it for 30 years, you're not counterfeiting anything anywhere. Why? something's keeping you going. You may not live in the local palace, but the people that is probably the ones who are most skeptical are the ones who come from somewhere else. They're not in this area. And they may be from down east or up in the mountains or coming. We had people from South Carolina and Virginia here this last year. The people where I live don't eat this kind of stuff. That's true. But you don't have to grow this kind of stuff. You can grow something else that does resonate with the people you're dealing with. I'm not saying you got to do it the way I'm doing it, either in form or substance. But the fact is, most people I know of eat, and they don't necessarily catch on to all the latest fads and so on and so forth. They don't have to, corn and beans and tomatoes and so on and so forth. Don't go bacon. Now, one of the difficulties that I will be frank with you about is ECO. And what ECO has done is a wholesale operation. They buy up from farmers and they market it. And it's a co-op, supposedly, but they pay 20% of their overhead to somebody run it for them. But what they're doing is they're going down east and picking up stuff, and they go up to the mountains and pick up stuff, and they bring it here. Well, number one, that's in our backyard, for starters. And secondly, somebody's got to take the time to work in Goldsboro and all the rest of the places down the east and all the places out west. It takes time to set up a market and get things going. Now, is the co-op simply there to make money for its participants? It appears to me to be the case. Is that what we ought to be about? No. I think we've got obligations to see to it that, you know, it not only happens here, but it happens in other places. And that doesn't mean you got to give up what you're doing and go down there and live. But it does mean that somebody needs to take the responsibility to help them organize markets other places. Restaurants, I know for a fact there are restaurants there in Beaufort, for instance. We're begging to have, you know, somebody, the truck runs down that direction and they bring it back up here. That means that the guy doing the growing and the guy doing the potential buying never get together. Now, what we need is, what's going to help agriculture in this state is when the guy who's doing the growing and the guy who's doing the eating are helped to get together. That's when we're all going to profit. Not because somebody goes down and buys up something down east and brings it back up here and sells it. Because they can make more money out of it. Or because they don't want to bail, they don't want to take the time to set up markets down there or deal with the restaurant. Somebody did it here. Somebody's done it in a lot of places. And I have problems with that approach.
But the demand here is outstripping the supply.
Sure is. But you know, and what's going to happen to that co-op when they got to pay the gas bill? You know, I mean, if we're really into this thing, either you're in or you're out. And if you're in, you don't pay diesel fuel from down east up here. You get off your ass and go down there, and you help them get together, you know, the restaurants and the market, so on and so forth. You put it together. We're them. That's what you do. And maybe it is that CFSA ought to be doing that. Somebody should be doing it. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, the co-op, by virtue of buying up that food, has some responsibilities to do that. And it's going to, and who's going to pick up the mess when, you know, diesel fuel tops out at $10, $12 a gallon? Are they going to be able to run up down the road? So, then what happens? So it's in many respects covering your own behind to set it up locally and get the production local and develop the market local. And if we can't do it now, given where all the news and all the publicity and all the rest of it's coming our way, it's never going to get done until people are starving to death and, you know, and it's the only food they can get. I hope we don't see that day. But I tell you, in talking to a lot of the old folks that lived through the Depression, they made it through the Depression because they could go back to the farm. There's no farm to go back to. They sold that a couple generations ago. What happens now if we get ourselves into the Depression, which is a possibility? It is a possibility. Certainly not going to be under the leadership or guidance of the federal government. With or without Mr. Bush. Because the corporations aren't going to let them do it. But I just...
We're going to talk about loss of farm.
When you go out to drive, by the way, look off to your left. They put in another driveway over across the road. They're doing that this morning.
Yeah. You were talking about farm tours and CFSA. Can you briefly say about CFSA over the last...
Well, Well, CFSA started that, those conferences. And it wasn't NC State that did it. NC State was there in the person of Bob Miller, who... for somebody who carries grudges like I do, to have dealt with the people over there and been the object of their derision in many respects, now that there's money in it, to see them come around and all of a sudden they're the glory folks. And I'm not talking about Nancy Kramer and the rest of them, but I'm talking about some of the other ones. It is hard to swallow. And if I was a big person, I could do it, but I ain't that big. Anyhow.
CFSA created an avenue for people to
get together.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if you go back and look at the menu, if you will, for the conference, it's always been about, you know, how to grow tomatoes or how to do this or how to do that. I mean, the real hands-on kind of stuff. There were always some of the sort of esoteric discussions too, and that's fine. But they've really been a lot of how-tos, important stuff. And it's covered both marketing and production. And had it not been for CFSA, that doesn't mean that stuff wouldn't have happened. But I think that there have been a lot of different parts that made this whole thing work. And it's been one of the important parts. You know, it would be interesting, I guess, at some point to tick off the parts. You know, it's been people who I think have had some vision, and you know, it may have been only as far as the cash readers were concerned. They were willing to buy. But they deserve more credit. I mean, David Bacon and the folks over at PIWAC didn't have to do what they did, but they did.
So a lot of people stepped up to the
sure did. Bill Smith, who now coaches, Buddy Russell, whose name I wish I could remember. People like F. Margaret, Phil Campbell at Flying Rio. The guys with 411 and Squids, that whole, what's the name of that group? It's Capital. I can be careful about it. That's another group, but they were sometimes on. There have been a lot of people the newcomers, and a lot of them have been here a long time. It's been interesting in the last few years, and for a long time, Ben Barker was about it over and done. But in the last couple of years, boy, there have been a lot of places that I don't know how many of them are going to make it, but they're doing a good job, and there's certainly a whole new face to it. That plus the fact that the markets are there now, I should think, means some good things happening over there. It's certainly worth my while, both financially and just personally, to go over there and deliver twice a week. It's been a couple times I had to make extra trips at night because somebody needed more or what have you, and that's, you say, okay, with a big gulp, because that's a long way over there. But that's, you do that. And, you know, they have bought your stuff, and they've got a bunch of people in there, and it's on the menu, and they need some help. So you just go do it. But Ben has been good about buying. Always was. Scott has.
Last thing. And what we have to talk about is
Well, I think that perception is usually stronger than fact. And perception is that organic is much more expensive. I don't think that bears out as far as the farmer's market is concerned. Now, stuff's not cheap, but it is not the prices that you see in certain stores. Now, how did that price get determined, is what you're asking? And I think there are a couple things. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. How I go about it anyway is that I'll watch prices in stores. I don't go to Whole Foods. I don't go to Weaver Street. So that means I'm in Lowe's and Food Lion. Who sell a lot of things they didn't used to and have, quote, organic, which may or may not be the case. But at any rate, so those are the folks that I'm watching, and I just sort of, you know, keep up with what they've got and what kind of numbers they're putting on it. Secondly, with the CSA, we've got to come to some decision about price as a group, and each of us sells some of the same things. So it's discussed, you know, what's a reasonable price here. If you're a real economist, you know, you'd be able to sit down and figure out how many hours of this and cost. That's way beyond my capability or desire. What I do, though, is to keep records. And, you know, I know what it sold for last year. You know, and that's probably what it's going to sell for this year, but you just sort of, you know, look and see. I've had the same prices now for 3 years at least. The price of gasoline hasn't been the same, but... And then just you try it out, you know, and if you've got leaks there and if it sends a piece, they don't sell, then you're going to have to do some thinking about it. And it may be that next week all the people who want to buy leaks show up at the market. You sell them all, and that happens not infrequently. $250 a head for a radicchia. Is what I consider to be a very good price. Some weeks they all sell, and some weeks they don't. That's the way it goes.
What about the prices of your?
That was what I can come to. One of the interesting things that I have watched is that there. As we were talking about before, I've been fortunate enough to have folks who want to try new things, and I think it's important to try new things.
Pickup trucks
is going by. Okay. Going down that way?
Yeah.
That's Will. Small or big?
Small.
Small. Either because of something somebody asked me to grow or because of one of the folks that wants to grow it, or we've got a new crop. And it'll take a year or so to figure out how to grow it, what the seasons are, you know, this, that, and the other things, so on and so forth. And it used to be you could do something like that, and you might have a couple years to be able to sell it before everybody else sort of jumped in the bandwagon. You got about a year now. And one of the things that's always sort of ticked me off, more than just sort of, it has ticked me off, is that people cut the price. I mean, not only do they take, you know, what you're growing, but they'll cut the price on you. Now, I am not an advocate for fixing prices by any stretch of the imagination. On the other hand, there's some ethic involved in setting prices. And you know, who's ox is being gored? You could. What I have noticed, however, is that and there's a guy that's fairly close to where I'm set up, who inevitably, whatever I got new, after the first year, if he thinks he can sell it, he'll have it, you know, cut it in half. I used to really get ticked off. And then I began to realize, well, he sells all his, but I'm selling all mine too. So, you know, as long as I'm selling mine, why? It is possible to have the price too low. Yeah, I don't think that much thought goes into most purchases, but that's a good idea, Fred. I'll try to remember that one. Rationalize it next time.
Luxury goods have a different price.
Yes. Yeah. Well, but leaks are leaks are leaks, you know, or fennel is fennel is fennel. It may be a little dicey sometimes, but you know, once you get used to it, they're not that much different. So I don't know what the secret is. You know, if you've got something and it's not selling, and you realize, maybe we've got a little too high on this thing. I don't, and I don't know anybody else that does, although it may happen. I do not walk around the market to see what prices are. I may ask one person, what do you think things are selling for today? You know, they may know and they may not. But if I walk around the circuit of the market once a year, that's unusual. I just hang a time there by myself. I gotta get there early, get set up. Can't go off and leave it, and by the time it's over with, I'm whipped. You know, that's enough. What they sold it for is their bid. I don't care. I suspect there are others that probably walk around and check, you know, see what somebody else is selling for. There is not price fixing. Nobody comes around and says, "Hey, beets are going to be $1.50 this week."
Is there any trick to deciding whether to sell or buy the item
you it has just practicalities. It takes a lot longer to weigh things. Now, if you got radicchio, not all of them the same size, you could say, well, you know, you're giving away that big one. In some respects, you are. But it's always amazing to me that you can have big ones and little ones in there, and somehow or other they all get gone. And they don't all, it's not all the big ones go at first. So, but to take something and weigh it and then figure out the price and so on and so forth, yeah, you ain't got time to do that. I mean, you're just struggling just to keep up with, they've got five different items here and you're trying to do the math in your head for that one, let alone weighing it. There are a few things that get weighed, but very few. The more I can cut it out, the better it is. Now, if we had a bigger space and had somebody else helping out and so on and so forth, that would be really good. I'm not opposed to it. I practically don't want to do it. And you can't keep people waiting. I mean, yes, it is a market and so on and so forth, and it is a social occasion, but they're not going to stand and wait forever. Dogs are very important. They have a real part of what's going on. And got personalities.
What's your current
crop? King goes down there every once in a while, more in the past, and her back end problems come and go. It always made it. When she can cross the line of going down to the farm where the berries are, when she crosses that line, it's like a new dog. What happened here? You know, I mean, trotting and beats me.
14.
The other two are strays that came via. One of them was a stray that's a black lab that a good friend of mine picked up from the pound, and they kept it for a number of years. Rudy is absolutely scared to death of everybody, and somebody just beat the tar out of him. We've had him now for 4 years, I guess, and he gradually has come out of his. I mean, he wouldn't come close to anybody when he first was here, and over time he has become much more social. And we've also figured out there's probably a female that beat him, because a female with a baseball cap or with her socks pulled up over the pants like softball player, he's gone. He will not come in the house. You can drag him in the house, and 60 seconds max, he's climbing the walls to get out. So whatever happened now. But Rudy is a real personality, and the third one is Katie, who is the golden mix of Lord knows what all. Is a great dog, friend to everybody. Life's a party. Doesn't know the difference between running through the garden and not running through the garden, unfortunately. But is everybody's friend. And, just it's a real contrast between the three of them. One of the stories about Rudy, and I may have told you before, but coming back here, you know, there's that real steep hill out there. And Rudy's back end is in terrible shape. I don't know whether he got hit by a car or something happened. He does not move very fast. But he's going to be the first one to top that hill. I mean, it's a classic tortoise and hare. Katie could outrun Rudy, every time, time after time after time. But Katie's not the first one to top that hill, ever. Rudy is. And I run him, I sometimes challenge him. And there's nothing spectacular. You can hear him coming. basically a three-legged gait. And he's gonna beat you to the top of that hill. Now what drives him, I ain't got a clue. But animals do have personalities. There's a lot of talk about each one of them, and about them and with them and so on and so forth. Right now, Rudy's losing all of his undercoat, his winter coat. It looks like a buffalo, a scruffy buffalo, so everybody takes a couple handfuls out, and by the time it really gets warm, I'll all be gone.
Did they chase off?
I think if the truth be known, probably not. Now, what does happen is that we try to relieve Rudy of some of his hair in strategic spots around. I think probably not. Neither of them. Now, Katie will chase squirrels and coons and possums, but deer, I don't think get much attention. But they're farm dogs, and they have learned what their territory is, they are right there with everybody. And it's interesting, their ability to find a spot on the farm where they can get to and they can see everybody from that spot. It'll be just uncanny the way they can find a place so they can keep an eye on everybody. Now, what are they watching? Are they watching somebody coming to them with the idea that they might be bringing food? Or are they just watching to keep track of folks? I don't know what to do. Oh yeah, and kids do too. The guy, the reason the road out there is named Friendly Pooch Lane was that the guy who had this house was always picking up what we referred to as dump dogs. We used to have the green boxes. People would always leave dogs and cats at the green boxes. And Skip would always bring them home, the dogs anyway. So there would always be four or five dogs around here. And after he sold the house to his son and he left, there's a small black dog called Chrissy who took on the farm. I mean, there's nobody up here, so she was down there at the farm all the time. It was everybody's buddy. And was a real hunter. I mean, serious hunter after moles and rats and everything. And after a number of years, she was gone. And under circumstances that don't bear any particular discussion about it. So the kids had been there the year before, wanted the dog, and let's get a dog, which is fine. I said, okay, you find one. If I like it, we'll do it. And it didn't take them long. They found Katie. Robin Kahanowicz, who runs the ag program over at Community College, Katie had shown up, her yard is a stray. She was looking for somebody to take it, so there you were. And then the people that had Rudy were transferred out to Oregon. And Rosie, who I mean, there are certain people you can't say no to. Rosie was one of them. And so she called me up and said, you got to take Rudy. And the week before, we got Katie. And so here we were a week later. And Rudy, I'd been around the house a lot, never took on to me in particular. But you can't turn that around. So I said, okay, all right. So, and we had sort of a trial day out here. And I'll be damned, within 30 minutes he was gone. We couldn't find him anywhere. So looked. And I guess on the second or third day, I found him down there in the bottom, down below that dam, and the weeds down there, and we're hiding. I couldn't get close to him, so I called her. I said, I found him, come get him. She said, well, I'll come get him, but I'm not bringing him home. I said, all right. He hadn't left since. So, at any rate.
So, you have any final thoughts about spring on the farm? Our next conversation will be about
summertime. I think the issue right now, this whole business about hiring help, I've been very fortunate in the past. Sometimes you get good ones, sometimes some of them aren't so good. This is a real sort of mixed group this year, and we're still at a point of wait and see what happens, and I'm really afraid. They're all going to go back to school, as is planned, and then find another group. That's where the program up at the community college comes in, because a lot of them are looking for part-time work, which is fine. But there's the anxiety about not being able to find somebody. So we'll see.
You got to have the labor.
You got to have the labor. And Latinos are great, but they don't get off from the chicken plant until 3. And if I've been working at a chicken plant for 8 hours, I don't know that I'd be interested in going out and working somewhere else. Day off. They're sending it all home. And we'll find somebody. I'm hopeful the guy who Will's working with him now, we'll stay at least through the fall. But you get, you don't want to fire anybody, but you got to have people who are willing to work. And you can't really hold damn responsible because nobody ever taught me. And the parents probably never hit a lick. I've got four trowels in the shed there, and we used to dig leaks with them. There were only two in the shed yesterday. And I asked, so anybody got the trowels? And then one of the folks pulled a trowel out of their bucket. And I said, I thought you said, is that a trowel? Which isn't bad. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But as a college student, it's a little late. It's a little late.
That's why they're here to learn.
Yeah, yeah. I sometimes think maybe they ought to pay me, but that would work. Well, some of them can afford it. Most of them can't. So, anyhow, we square away.
That was good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I got a laptop. Then, keep it as that entry fee, that could be a real possibility if either a hospital gets what they want. We can send that to law, and they can say, well, you know, we need them on the line. I mean, for example, if we had something and then it got to be inflated, they would probably say, okay, I don't agree with that.
grandfather, my great grandfather, his problem.
Yeah. I think that would fix it. And sure, something was going on. Yeah, they, what they should say is, I'm sorry, we don't have time. We've got some real nice cars here. Here's one for $1 million, $1,000.
Yeah.